Yes, hello and welcome. It's exciting times. We're a week away from the beginning of the baseball season. And Jake, you know, nothing goes better with baseball than ice cold beer. And there's no better place to get ice cold beer than literally the people who make the beer called ice cold beer. Isn't that true?
You know what? I think it is.
I'm speaking, of course, about our old friends over at Left Field Brewery. It's a small community brewery. You probably know about it. I feel like if you listen to this show, you probably know what Left Field Brewery is if you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan. That's safe, right?
Yeah, I think it's a Toronto institution at this point.
I'm willing to agree with you on that.
If I were to be so bold.
Yeah, absolutely right. A small community brewery. We love what they do. We love their beers. We love what they sort of how they are part of the community. As you said, you can visit the tap room and the bottle shop at 36 Wagstaff Avenue in Leslieville. Open daily Sunday to Thursday, 11 to 9. Friday, Saturday, 11 to 11. They also deliver to your door, fanshop.leftfieldbrewery.ca. They also have events, first pitch events happening at bars and restaurants across Ontario for the first 2 weeks of the season, specials on ice cold beer. You can find one near you at their site. And that is not enough. That's enough, but that's not all, I guess, more accurately. Because we are good friends and we are such big fans of what they do over there, you might remember a couple of years ago, we gave away a cooler bag with a promo code for our show. Well, we are working again this year. We are working together. Less Than Jays listeners, you can get a free can koozie. Keep your ice cold beer ice cold for even longer. Visit the fan shop, as they said before, fanshop.leftfieldbrewery.ca. Spend over $55, get it delivered to your door. That's Russell Martin amount of money. And you add the koozie to your cart and then do promo code less than J's, all caps, all one word, at checkout. The hand koozie is free, must be 19 plus while supplies last. I recommend, of course, ice cold beer, that delicious blonde ale. That really is a baseball beer. Like you can give us ad read copy all you want. Ice cold beer is a baseball beer. It's the ultimate bleacher beer, I would say.
Ice cold beer is what some would call a crispy boy. And I think you can make the argument that ice cold beer is the crispiest of crispy boys.
And that's not all, Jake. We're thrilled to be part of this announcement. They are releasing an all-new limited edition fruited version of the All-Ontario Ice Cold called Ice Cold Lime. Just a hint of real lime juice. The only ingredient that isn't part of Ontario ingredient. It's 98% Ontario ale. The other one's 100%. The 2% is the hint of lime juice. Lime, delicious lime beer, ballpark pairings, fish tacos and shrimp ceviche.
Here's the thing about an ice cold lime. If you want to picture yourself sitting in the 500s when the roof is open and you're just roasting like the tomato you are, a nice ice cold lime beer, it's good stuff right there.
You can get those beers, the ice cold beer and the ice cold lime, at the brewery, at the LCBO, at select grocery stores and beer stores, or at home delivery through the fan shop. And if you get them at the fan shop, let them know we sent you. Use promo code less than J's. Add that koozie to your cart and get it for free. Let them know we sent you because we're fans of theirs and they're fans of ours and you're fans of ours and you're fans of theirs. So you get a free koozie. I mean, that's just good business. That is, once again, fanshop.leftfieldbrewery.com. .ca, promo code less than J's. Get your free koozie, enjoy your ice cold beer, and get ready for the start of baseball season. Okay, Jake, it is once again time for Less Than Jays. We are here. We are ready for a brand new season of baseball. We are exactly 1 week away. 1 week from today, we will be overreacting to the season opener, the Blue Jays, either having blown it or looking incredible. We are 7 days away from opening day. We've had another week of spring training games. We had bad Yusei Kikuchi and then good Yusei Kikuchi. We've had continued concerns and maybe some bright spots about Jose Barrios. We have a bit of clarity about the back end of the roster as Addison Barger has been sent down, as has a couple other guys, Aurelvis and Hagen Danner and I think Yosef Zulueta also went down. So it'll be between Otto Lopez and Nathan Lukes likely for that 26th man unless they sign somebody, yada, yada, yada. I mentioned last week we wanted to do a two-parter basically this week. We do a best-case scenario, worst-case scenario, our brightest hopes and our darkest fears back-to-back in different segments. Jake, would you like to start with best-case scenario or worst-case scenario?
I think let's start best. I think once we're warm, I feel like worst-case should happen once we're good and warm.
Yes. Great call. So best-case scenario, I will start, and I will say best-case scenario is the team – I saw a good piece of tweeting this week from Chris Black of the Blue Jays broadcast, who was talking about the positional depth. They have basically like top 10 to top 7 to top 5 to as much as top 1 behind the plate. Like positionally, they are expected per wins above replacement to be among the top third of the league in basically every single position group: center field, right field, left field, first base, second base, third base, best catcher duos in the league, refined the bullpen, good starting pitching. They certainly have the all-around talent that we've seen many times when you have a long 6-month season. It's got to be a different person every single day at some points. Guys will get hot, guys will get cold, guys will get hurt. They seem to have the depth in a different way than they did in years prior to maintain a pretty high level of play throughout the course of the entire year. So I will say my first piece of best-case scenario optimism comes from when you look at the way the lineup is. I'm looking at right now the Fangraphs projected opening day lineup. It goes Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Belt, Kirk, Varsho, Chapman, Merrifield, Kiermaier. That is a very talented 1-9. All those guys are good at a lot. Like, it's one thing, like, they've had great offensive lineups before, but you're also looking at, like, you also have great fielders here. You have good base runners. Like, you have an incredible third baseman. You have an incredible center fielder. You have an incredible catching tandem. You have Bo and Vlad. You have George Springer moving over to right field. You have Dalton Varsho, a great left fielder. You have a ton of defense. You have a ton of good base running. When you look at it, you say, man, they're not bad at anything anymore, right? That was sort of the when we looked at what the team was struggling with in years past, like there was things that they were bad at. They were bad at plate discipline. They were bad at outfield defense. And nothing you can look at for me and say the team is going to struggle with blank, other than injury, which we'll get into the second half of this podcast. I'm sure everybody healthy, everyone looking good. There's no glaring, like, well, they don't have any blank on the roster. So when we start with my best case scenario, that is where I start with. I start with it's going to be a good competitive team basically every single night. Does that line up with sort of how you feel?
Yeah, and I think sort of along the same lines, my first best case is sort of, I'm going to call it the spring narrative, which, you know, it's a running joke at this point of, you know, guys showing up saying they're in the best shape of their lives. Everyone starts at 0-0 to start the year. Anything can happen. It's a long season, blah, 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 blah. All those good old-fashioned spring cliches. But the reason I'm bringing up the spring cliches is because all those spring cliches have been said about this year's Blue Jays team. And it sort of feels to me that when we want to talk best case, these spring cliches about the Blue Jays specifically basically all come true. And a lot of them are the ones you touched on. You have Springer fully healthy for, I don't know, the first time ever in right field, so he doesn't have to beat his body up quite as much, even though he probably will. You have Kevin Kiermaier and Varsho completely reinventing the outfield defense, supposedly. Also bringing sort of, you know, they're calling it the new attitude. If you listen to the show, you know my opinions on that, but in terms of defense and approaches, maybe at the plate, definitely approaches and positioning in the outfield, a complete sea change. You have, like you said, the catching duo, the idea that Alejandro Kirk does not regress after his breakout year last year. Danny Jansen continues to be underrated Danny Jansen, which my wife gives the thumbs up to as she loves him. Matt Chapman continues to be the best defensive third baseman in the world. Vladdy bounces back. Bo continues to lead the league in hits. second base, you sort of figure it out as you go between the three guys that can play it. And then now, as we talked about last week, the bullpen depth, which to me is sort of the biggest spring talking point that, or the spring talking point that I think could have the biggest impact on the year comparative to the last two, where even if some guys are bad in the bullpen, there are enough names to throw on the pile, so to speak, that sort of the back end guys that they can afford to be bad, they can sort of afford it this year, which right. In the last 2 years, they were stuck with whoever you got, or you were throwing, you know, Adam Simber for 90 innings or something, or Trent Thornton for 90 innings 2 years ago. So I think for me, the best case scenario is all the feel good spring stories written by the media, owned by the team, all sort of coming true.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think to your point, you know, having gone through the 40-man roster on the Patreon, I sort of pointed out that there's a lot of bullpen guys that you aren't wincing at looking at coming into the game. And I think your point is well made, is like the Trevor Richards leash, like they can just cut him. If it's not going well, they don't have to do what they did last year where they trot him out for the entire year and let him pitch to a mid five ERA because they're not totally sure who else is going to eat those innings. They have, you know, along with the eight guys that are going to be in the bullpen, they have plenty of guys they can call on. They have the Zulueta, they have the, you know, Nate Pearson even. They have more than enough guys that they can ring up and get going, and not even get into, like, they could call up Ricky Tiedemann if they really needed to. If things got crazy and they wanted to make the push and it wanted to be let's go for broke, they have those guys too. They have Tiedemann, they have Barger, where it's like if they need a shot in the arm and don't want to spend, they have the internal ability to call up exciting players that are already on their roster, which I think is, you know, and last year we had that with Moreno, but he was a different kind of great player, right? It was sort of like his brilliance and his talents and what he was going to bring to the team last year wasn't going to be like jump off the page. It was going to be good catching defensively and some good at-bats, but not what you hope Barger or Tiedemann can bring you, which is that real spark of like, oh man, we got another impact guy here in this lineup, in this rotation. I think that's important as well. Another piece is the rotation. Alek Manoah, Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett, pretty solid, pretty darn good. Really feeling that Manoah, not nearly as worried about any of the bounce back as some of the projections may be. I think some of that has to do with people thinking the home run rate might go up. I think Kevin Gausman is probably going to be, you know, he was pretty unlucky last year, and I think he's a guy that it doesn't have to switch a whole lot for him to have a very good year. Bassett is solid, if unremarkable. It's going to be touch and go. Berríos is the guy that I'm most worried about. Kikuchi is sort of like, if he's good, if he's passable at all, it's found money. But Berríos is going to be a linchpin, like cornerstone kind of, could be really important. It could be really disastrous, but you know, you can have faith in the overwhelming amount of innings he pitched to a 3.5 ERA, which is like, he was a sub-4 ERA guy, literally four times in 5 years, and was four on the dot the other time. So it's like, there's so much mountain of evidence that he's a good pitcher. It just has really been bad. I think if you're looking for best-case scenarios, you're saying, Berríos doesn't even have to be back to 3.5 ERA guy. He can be of a good number four, and you're stinging because of the depth that you've acquired ahead of him in Manoah and Gausman and even Bassett.
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll get to worst case in a bit, but for me, the two guys that I don't even really have a worst case for, because I don't believe it will come to pass, is Manoah and Gausman. Like, yeah. I'm pretty, you know, and it's funny comparing that to when we sat here and had this exact conversation last year, where it was like, can Manoah do it again? Or were they right to sign, you know, Kevin Gausman to that much money to lead the rotation? And turns out the answer was yes. I think a thing lost in the absolute disaster of the second wildcard game was how good Kevin Gausman was until they pulled him
right
in that game. And I thought Manoah's been, you know, again to your spring cliches, Manoah's been saying all the right things about his wild card appearance last year. And I don't see either of those guys taking, I don't see them taking a large enough step back for it to be a disaster. Like, is Manoah going to be a top three Cy Young candidate again? I have no idea, but I certainly think he's capable and will be your 1A, 1B guy with Gausman. I think sadly the best case is that, you know, Kikuchi is decent, an above average five, and that Berríos is basically an average four. It's kind of the best case. And as you, I think you put it well, if you get anything more from those guys, it's found money. And then if you want to go deeper into rotational best case scenarios, you already look ahead to July and see that Hyunjin Ryu comes back strong, and can give you, you know, 4 months of what he's done for his entire career. And he becomes your 4 or 5. And then all of a sudden you're looking at a potential playoff rotation of Manoah, Gausman, Bassett, and Ryu, which is pretty damn good.
Yes. The landing for Berríos is a little softer this year, and sort of, even though the rotation is generally the same, you're swamping Bassett for the Ryu Stripling, not being the opening day starter, not being the guy that they just gave the money to. It's like, it is funny to call him found money. It's a little more like spent money, but the money's already gone. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, and there's no trading him at that value right now. But the landing is a little softer, as you sort of lined out. Bassett allows just that little bit more cushion that he doesn't have to carry the load. He doesn't have to be the ace. There are two other guys in Manoah and Gausman that have that 1A, 1B, and he can be a 3A, 3B with Bassett in the best of scenarios. And then, again, Kikuchi just giving you 4 or 5 innings every fifth day is like, they have the bullpen depth for that to be okay right now, as long as they're not, making a huge habit of it. You can do that once a week. You can have sort of an extended bullpen day. I know it's dreaming, but there's some other real causes for optimism. If Bo Bichette hits the ground running at all, if he is good at all in the first half of the season, you're like, man, this guy is a special talent and could really be something. And you mentioned, like, it's not hard. It's very easy to see a really great Vladimir Guerrero Jr. year in that, you allude very vaguely to it, the like bounce back. It's like bouncing back from a 132 OPS plus, like bouncing back from an 818 OPS. But like, he's a guy that OPS can be 1,000. It was literally 1,000 in 2021. Like, he is somebody that is able to have a 132 OPS plus and still be like, his OPS plus could go up by 30. His OPS could go up by 180 points next year. That is how talented and how good he is. He could just be a little bit better, and his OPS could go up by 80 points, and he's a 900 OPS hitter. And then that is 40 home runs and 350 OBP. Like, that's the difference. He was still 32 and 339 last year in those metrics. So like, him being even a little bit better is like such an elite hitter. That's so good. I think Matt Chapman as well last year, like, the trade was a little late and he wasn't super comfortable early in the year, ended up salvaging a pretty darn good year. But if he's comfortable and he's ready to go the whole way, that's the guy that, you know, Fangraphs has projected to lead the team in WAR this year because of how good his defense is. I think they've cleaned up a lot of the rough edges around the team, is sort of how I would say it, where they had a lot of raw talent in years past, but there was sort of a rough edge to them. And this year, that stuff is, you're hoping, you know, the way that they're going to play, not to get into the anything about sort of the mood, but sort of the style they're going to play. It's like, you're going to see good aggressive base running, good fielding, smart baseball. Like, I think having Brandon Belt around, and this is, you know, you cast aspersions about locker room leadership and a guy who wins the right way, but just even the way that he approaches at bats, going into, you know, sort of diving into his StatCast page, what a great job he does of forcing pitchers to throw his pitches and commanding those at bats and being a guy that knows the pitches he can attack and doesn't bother with the ones that he can't, and just does so many things right. I think he can be such an important influence on some of these hitters that are growing and maturing, right? Bo in at now at year 25, Vlad 24, like we're starting to see the, scarily enough, like the early prime of these guys, not even, we're still pre-prime on them, but, you know, of the growth, I think Belt is a great example of somebody that Vlad can learn from about, you know, really staying within what makes you great at all times. And, yeah, you mentioned the Kirk Jansen, like they could both have slightly worse years than last year and still be the best offensive catcher tandem in the league, because it's just not a position that has a ton of value. And yeah, right at the top of the list, right at the top of the order, and we talked about this last year about who's the most important player in the team, and I thought sneakily it could be George Springer. I think if Springer is able to play the most games that he has played in a season with the Jays. I mean, he still played 133 last year, but I think down the stretch, he would tell you that the elbow injury was not him at 100%. If you can get him for 140 games and he is playing at or near 100% the whole way, man, that makes the whole thing sing. So I'm interested. I think they've cleaned a lot of things up, and the mix now of the homegrown guys that they've chosen to build around and the veterans that they've gone to, you know, accentuate those positives and clean up those negatives, I think it's a really well-built, complete team that I think should compete for the World Series, best-case scenario.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you brought up Vlad, because Vlad, to me, whether we're talking best-case or worst-case or not, Vlad, to me, is what I'm most excited about with the Blue Jays this year. Just watching him in the spring, you know, obviously last year his big problem, if you want, as to your point, if you want to call it a problem, he still hit 32 home runs and OPS over 800. But the balls into the ground seemed like a real issue. And just watching him this spring, even when he's sort, I made a joke about this last week, but it's true. Even when he's getting out, he's flying out, which seems like a small thing, but, you know, if you watched him last year, it's not. Like, the amount of ground ball outs Vlad hit into last year was bordering on comical. And, you know, I know it's spring, but he's still, you know, 50% of his hits in spring were home runs. He OPS 963, only 24 at-bats, so obviously a very small sample size. And again, spring training, etc. But just watching him at the plate and his approach this year, or this spring, it really seems to me like he's, you know, it's an easy thing to be like, he's locked in spring and, you know, all that garbage. But shy of lending itself too much to spring cliches, I really do think Vlad is about to have sort of his, I think he's going to have his pay me year, basically. Obviously, the extension talk for him and Bo and Manoah isn't going to go anywhere this year. But I think Vlad's going to make that noise about the extension talk even louder this year, because I expect a big year from him. And I think, you know, I don't want to say it's this simple, but I think if Vlad has sort of the year that I'm expecting from him, then the team will be fine. Springer being healthy and good is a bonus. Bo seems like he'll just, you know, his big question is not at the plate, so he's going to do his thing there. But if Vlad can really bring it this year, which I see no reason to think he won't, you know, going into his age 24 season, I think he's going to make the whole thing a lot easier to swallow, and I think it's going to be very fun.
Your best case scenario, I assume, is also a World Series?
Yeah, I think we're at the point now in the window and in the sort of path with the team where shooting for anything less has to be a disappointment.
We'll take a quick boo at the projected standings. Projected standings have them taking a step back from last year, 89 and 73. How's that float your boat?
That seems wrong to me. They won what, 93 last year?
They won 92 last year. 92
last year.
Projection standings right now, it was the Yankees 92 and 70. Blue Jays 83 and 79 in second. The Rays 88 and 74. The Red Sox 83 and 79. The Orioles 78 and 84. And I'll tell you off the hop, one game ahead of the Rays is like, you could not give me a less comfortable projection. Oh, great. I can't wait to be one game ahead of the Rays with three games to play. That seems like it's perfect.
Yeah, I'm not sure because I think, you know, it's hard to be like, oh, they're going to improve on 92 wins. You know what sure. I mean? But I kind of feel like they are. I think they're going to win the East this year.
I think it's funny. I mean, listen, these projections are absolutely meaningless. But I should also say that 89 wins is also projected to be third most in the American League. You have the Yankees at 92, the Astros at 90, and the Blue Jays at 89. So they would be the top wild card to see. The AL Central, 84 wins for the Guardians. We'll see, right? This is the first year with the more balanced schedule, so we will see sort of how that levels things off. There was a chance that it's a very win-heavy division. We'll see. I'm really curious because there was, you know, I think we tapped into it last year. There was sort of an underlying, like, the team both felt better and worse than they were performing at times where you're like, they should be better than this, but also you were like, man, they just aren't blowing the teams away that you thought they would. They didn't have the blowout energy wins that you sort of expected them to have when they came into the year. So we will see. 89-73. I'm comfortably taking the over. This feels like a 93-94 win team to me. I think they're better than last year.
I think I agree, and I think sort of to your point about last season and them not feeling like better and worse, so to speak. I think it's important to note that there were 46 and 42 when Charlie was fired, and they went 46 and 28 under Schneider last year. So it's I'm not saying that like a baseball manager makes that much of a difference, but I am saying that this year they don't have to go through a clubhouse shakeup, which for better or worse, is I think probably a good thing. And also the thing that they didn't do last year, despite having a much better second half, is they never really got on that big winning streak that we always talk about.
Yeah.
You know, they won seven in a row in July and then five in September, but it was a lot of like four wins here and a loss and then three wins and a loss. Their longest one of the year was from May 24th to June 2nd, where they won eight games in a row.
Nothing shabby, but
they didn't do the, like, we're 17-2 this month like we expected.
Yeah, they did do, like, they did play their best baseball in September again, right? They went 18-10 in September, 64 win percentage. But, yeah, to your point, I think it was good. It wasn't like blow you away incredible. They were also very good in one-run games last year. They were 30-20 in one-run games.
I think for me, a way I would summarize a best-case scenario is it feels like the last 2 years especially, we've sort of jokingly but also not at all jokingly compared in-season to 2015 and how that team went on the incredible tear in August and September. And I think for me, the best case is that we don't have to have that conversation this year.
Yeah.
And that the team is just good from April onwards. And we don't have to do the, well, if they catch fire again in August, you know, which like is great and it's fun, but I would much prefer, but you know, they were 14-12 in May and 15-13 in June and 14-12 in July and 13-14 in August. Like, I would like just, like, 18 wins every month. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right there. You would like them to have a year where they don't have to get their shit together in September, right? That's sort of like the last 2 years. It is easy to look at the win totals, but like the last 2 years, they went 37-19 combined in September, right? They played like 65 win baseball the last two Septembers. They went 19-9 in 2021 and came up a game short, and they went 18-10 in 2022 and made it. You'd love to, like, obviously it's great to have that happen and to be playing good baseball in September, although, I mean, last year they sort of pretty clearly proved that it doesn't mean a whole lot once you come playoff time. But, yeah, I think we learned from the way that the Yankees ran out last year is, like, you know, you don't want to get total overreact to every result, but you would like to not have to save the season coming down the stretch. It would be nice to be in the driver's seat the whole way. So I do agree with that. And I am with you. I know I picked World Series prediction as the best case, but I think talking regular season best case, I think winning the East is sort of like should be the team goal this year, is to like they should win. They should believe that they're going to win the American League East all year long.
Yeah. And I think they're going to.
That being said, let's change gears quickly and dig into the specialty, what we do better than anybody, and get worried. Right after this. So, Jake, an American League East title and a World Series appearance is the best case scenario. Let's put on our only we can do it ass hats and say, what's your first big fear in the worst case scenario of all the little voices in your head that are saying, yeah, but what's the biggest, loudest one saying most often?
I mean, the outfield and injuries has to be number one. I think we can talk all about defensive runs saved as we want, but if/when Springer and Kiermaier go down, we are a stone's throw away, possibly literally, from a Varsho, Merrifield, Biggio infield, or outfield, sorry. Which, that's... like, no disrespect to those guys, but you're not winning a World Series with that.
Yeah, it is. It's not a huge stretch to be pretty concerned about that. I would say. I mean, even just the George Springer going down, you're sort of very quickly like, oh shit.
You have Kiermaier and Merrifield in the outfield now.
Yes, and you're going from like the Kiermaier is a neat like frivolity to have to like, oh shit, he's got to play every day. He's gonna have to play lefty lefty. He's gonna have to be there all the time. Or you're you know, digging into your Nathan Lukes, you're digging into your Otto Lopez's, you're digging into your Cabin Biggio outfields. The easy one for me as well.
And I think that's a good point about Kiermaier being like, you're nice to have. Like, we've seen very good Blue Jays teams with not great outfielders playing a lot of games. Not great outfielders, not great hitters playing a lot of games. And that works when seven of the nine guys are monsters.
Yes.
But the second that, like, two of those seven go down and all of a sudden your fifth most important offensive player is Kevin Kiermaier, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it last year when just Springer would go out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Last year, we were just like, shit, it's a lot of Tapia this year. It's a lot of praying that Zimmer figures it out. It's a lot of, like, okay, now we have to play Jackie Bradley Jr. every day, which is like...
We saw a lot of Bradley Zimmer and Jackie Bradley and Ramel Tapia had what, like 450 at-bats last year?
Yeah, Ramel Tapia had 435 at-bats. Bradley Zimmer had 202 plate appearances. Jackie Bradley had 80. Like, those guys combined for like 650 at-bats. Like, that's a ton of guys. Like, that's a lot of guys that didn't get you much of anything, that basically provided nothing. And it's not a huge stretch to look at that and go, well, Nathan Lukes is probably going to be replacement level if he plays, and you're hoping Otto Lopez, who is an infielder playing in the outfield, can cover you off. But it would be it would be you'd have to have pretty strong belief in the Whit Merrifield, Kevin Biggio bounce back years, which I am fairly strong on. But on the other hand, you know, Merrifield is about to be 35. Biggio has had as much time proving he is who he is as anything. And, you know, there's a couple other things. You know, if we're doing the overall, what are you worried about? Here's one for me that I don't think. I was looking at Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Sort of miraculous. He's missed three games in the last three seasons. You believe that?
That's, I mean, I do because I've seen it. But like, yeah, it's pretty crazy. But
he played 160 last year, 161 the year before, and 60 in the 2020 season. It's crazy. He hasn't basically not missed a single game.
Bo, I think, was 155 and 162 the last 2 years. So
that's pretty wild, man. That's a pretty incredible health. They've been 159 the 2 years prior each for Bo, and then 29. Remember, he missed half of the 2020 season. So he also hasn't been out in 2 years. And not saying that it's inevitable and that everybody gets hurt. It's an incredible tantamount. Those guys in their early prime years haven't gotten hurt at all. But boy, one of them going down, you're in some real trouble as well. And that doesn't get into the other issues, right? Is sort of you could say Alejandro Kirk, Danny Jansen. They are projected to be the best catching duo in the league. Could also be like, man, maybe that was Kirk's career year, and Jansen has struggled to stay on the field. He's a great guy, a great hitter that I really am rooting for. He is a catcher. Catchers get injured, and he has been injured significantly every season of his career. Has not played more than 70 games either. Played 72 games last year and 70 the year before that. Just hasn't been able to stay on the field. It's tough when you're a catcher. It's tough to stay on the field. It seemed like every time he got momentum, he would get hurt. Kirk really fell off at the end of last year with power. Brandon Belt is just washed, right? It's sort of one of those things. Yeah. It's like, I have all these great thoughts about Brandon Belt, and he was so good in 2021. But also, like, the exit velocity doesn't lie. He was hurt last year, and he was not good when he played. Maybe Dalton Varsho is hated here. I've also had that thought. There's a mailbag question coming up, and I'm just like, maybe Dalton Varsho doesn't work. It's one of those ones where, like, a lot of people tell you that it's going to work. And I believe it's going to work, but then it's also like, I've also just never seen this dude in my life. I really don't know.
The other thing with Varsho is, like, I made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to bring up the Teoscar trade today, but we're in the worst case here. So I'm gonna, sort of combine with what we're talking about, where if Springer goes down and all of a sudden your outfield offense is really questionable, like, yes, Varsho hit 27 home runs last year. But he had an OPS under 750. His OPS plus was just above league average. He's never had, like, I mean, only three seasons, but, like, has yet to have a, like, truly stunning or at least above average, well above average offensive season. And, you know, if Springer goes down and you're looking at, or Kiermaier goes down, you're looking at this outfield you're talking about, you know, that's that offense production that you would get from Teoscar, you know, if Varsho doesn't end up being a guy who can produce, if not all of it, at least 75% of that, 80% of that, then, you know, I don't care how good his roots are at the ball. You know what I mean? Like, it's trouble.
The Springer one continues to hang over all of this, because you quickly go from, like, you have this incredible all-around outfield to, like, you have two guys who are not far of slipping away from being a pure defensive specialist, but trying to hold on hope for the Varsho. We switch to the rotation. We went through it. We believe in Manoah Gausman. Berríos, it could not work. This could be a disaster. Berríos could be a real, true, like, we look at this in a few years and go, man, if they hadn't butchered the Berríos thing, who knows?
Yeah.
Bassett is good and reliable, also 34 years old. There's no telling that the correlation of what Kikuchi is doing now will mean anything in the regular season. And now you're talking about it. Manoah and Gausman have to be great, and they have to be there all season long. And it's just pitchers blow up that's just what happens. You know, I have all the faith in the world in the size and strength of Alek Manoah to be a guy who can pitch 200 innings and not worry about it. But you've seen it happen a million times. Every pitcher, every year, all the time. Pitchers get hurt one day. It's sort of, it doesn't have to have a reason, doesn't have to have a underlying thing. It can just happen. So it's hard to say all of it is injuries. It's like a sort of a cop-out, I think, to look at this and be like, well, if people get hurt, like if anybody gets hurt in the league, it's going to be trouble. But you could also do the, like, the bullpen is improved with depth, capital B, but, right? Like, if there was some moments last year where Romano wasn't elite overall. He's been very, very good for the last 2 years, but doesn't take a whole lot for that switch to go the other way. And then you go, okay, what if Swanson is a terrible trade move? And then you're like, okay, now it's Jimmy Garcia, Anthony Bass, who's had 1 year where he turned it around, Tim Mesa, Adam Simber, who is like a novelty guy, Zach Pop, Trevor Richards. All of a sudden, you're like, wait a minute, none of these guys, they're all good to have. None of them are the go-to, right? You see it, the sand slipping through the fingers quickly. If Romano isn't great and the Swanson thing isn't good, all of a sudden you're like, you start grasping and you start panicking. I can see it. It's faint and it's, I have to squint, but I can see a panic scenario here with this team, unfortunately.
I think my number one concern with the bullpen, despite there being more depth there than before, is even if Romano is great, that's it, then, you know, if Jimmy is what, 38?
Jimmy is 32 and a half.
Is he really? God damn.
Yeah. Anthony Bass is 34. Or 35, okay. Pardon me.
Anthony Bass is 35. You know, Jimmy's 32. And then we're getting close to the end of the list of guys that I trust without thinking right now.
Right.
Like, I think a lot of those guys are good, decent to good. Like, your Simbers and, you know, Swanson kind of got rocked yesterday. Again, spring training, but he was throwing the end of the game against a bunch of, like, scrubs.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor Richards looks really bad. Nate Pearson's a giant question mark. So, you know, to your point, I could very well see this pen out, even if Romano is excellent, even if Romano and Jimmy are excellent, even if Romano and Jimmy and Bass are excellent. There's still a lot of question there. You know, Simber has to be good. Mesa as your lefty, I don't trust him at all. Mitch White, you know, he doesn't inspire confidence. Trevor Richards has been terrible. Zach Pop, who knows? Trent Thornton is Trent Thornton. You know, you go to your depth. And while, yes, there's lots of guys to throw on the pile, those guys are your Paul Fries and your Junior Fernandez's and your Hagen Danners, and then you're sort of waiting to see if Chad Green can come back. So, like, I could see a lot, like a very quick turn on this bullpen, because despite adding depth and despite having some promise, they still didn't really fix a lot of the issues the pen had last year.
And even in the best of scenarios, a bullpen can just be bad 1 year for no
totally
rhyme or
reason. Well, this one hasn't even been good yet.
That's true.
And they added, their big bullpen ad was another guy who does the same thing everyone else does that we don't even know if he's good. And the big hope for something different of what we want is literally Nate Pearson. And who knows? So I want to be optimistic about the pen, but I am mostly optimistic about the pen. But the fact that they didn't really solve the problem worries me.
I mean, yeah, I think in general we lean far further to the first half of this podcast than the second. Just the exercise.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
The exercise was best case, worst case, and I mean, we laid out basically the entire team as the potential for the worst case scenario. But you have Chad Green waiting in the wings. the worst case is that Chad Green is also absolutely toast. Or that the second base platoon, all three of those guys aren't good. It's very easy to happen.
Yeah. Oh, God. Second. I didn't even the rest of the infield is so good, I kind of forget second base is a thing.
That three-headed monster could work out really well. It could also be like neither of them are, you know, Witt's a little done. Biggio doesn't have the contact to back up the play discipline, and Espinal sort of like goes back to what we expected him to be before he stole a job 2 years in a row, both third base and then second base, and what he does. But yeah, it's worst case scenario. I mean, when we get worst case scenario, I think they end up in the mid 80s. They end up, you know, they end up 83, 84, 85, and they, you know, the division's just too good, and they are on the outside looking in, and they get passed by the Rays, and then they end up they get passed by the Orioles. Sort of, I think worst case scenario is they end up worse than the Orioles. And once again, I'm not afraid of the Boston Red Sox, but worst case scenario is like the upstart Orioles sort of Seattle them this year, where it's like this young team with nothing to lose doesn't even care, and they are just like absolutely carefree. And the Jays are suddenly like they went from this young upstart team that has nothing to lose to like now there's a bunch of veteran guys on here. There's a bunch of guys, Belt and Springer and Kiermaier and Merrifield and Gausman and Bassett and Kikuchi and Romano and Swanson and Garcia and Bass and Meza and Simber. All those guys are in their 30s. That's half the roster, right? It's gone from this young upstart team that's all on the rise to like these guys have to win. This has to work, and a little more pressure on them, and that could be combustible. We'll see. It ended up being pretty combustible last year, and I don't think any of us expected it last year for them to be ever in a point where Charlie could get fired, and it did happen. So, you know, that was a sign, and Ross came out and said it. Like this team is in a space now where accountability is name of the game. Things aren't going right. Things should be going right. So if things aren't going well, this could be a chaotic year.
Yeah, and I think on the one hand, it's encouraging that the worst case is like 83, 84 wins. On the other hand, as we said in the first segment, this is a team who the only goal should be winning the World Series. And 84 wins at this point is a worst case scenario, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. Okay, let's take a breath, because that was enough. That's enough worst case scenario. It's not as much fun. Let's take a breath. We are back to our regularly scheduled rotation. So it's time to get back to the mailbag. Let's do it after this. All right, Jake, it is mailbag time. It's back, very exciting, baby, to open up the mailbag. You excited? You excited about this?
As a great man once said, yeah, baby.
First question is about the 2020 and 2022 banners. I'm not sure if you saw this. Did you see this?
Yes.
So the banners now read 92 World Series, 93 World Series, 2015 AL East champs, 2016 AL Wild Card champs. I'm already like, oof. Then it says 2020 AL Wild Card Series, 2022 AL Wild Card Series. Two banners for two game series that they lost.
I'm of the opinion that the 2016 and 2020 and 2022 banners should not exist.
Yeah, even the 2016 one is not good to me. And no, they at least won that game. It's memorable.
I don't love the 2015 one either, but I will give it because they won the AL East.
You win the division, you get a banner. That one I don't mind.
I think, but, you know, your 2016, you have winning the wild card and winning the ALDS. And then, like, that one's borderline. I don't like it, but I can see it. But the 2020 and 2022 ones are really bad. It's like it's embarrassing to me. It's like it's literally a participation ribbon.
Yeah. You could not have a lesser occasion to hang a banner. You really, yeah. There's really nothing you could do to be less.
It's literally celebrating that you weren't the best team in your division and you lost that series.
Didn't even win the series. That's you what lost, hurts. And
it says, and it says wild card series. It doesn't even say like wild card winner because they won a spot. Oh, it's so bad.
And they went 32-28 in 2020. Also, like, it's not.
And they lost those games like combined, like 18-2.
Like that was the year that was there was like eight playoff teams, right? Like
yeah, it was, oh, it was seeded 1-8.
Not yeah, no, good.
They're bad. They're really bad. They're really embarrassing.
Not good. Don't think that's good at all. Gross. Dr. Internet wants to know which Blue Jays prospect has the best baseball name and is therefore the most valid prospect. I have the depth chart up in front of me. Let me scroll down here.
I mean, I love Hagendanner. Hagendanner is great. It's a fun name to say.
There was the when the Zips came out, there was like the randomly like, oh, I guess Damiano Palmigiani is supposed to be is having a great year.
Spencer Horwitz is good because he sounds like a guy you could go to Hebrew school with.
Yes. And he played, I think he played on Team Israel this year.
I believe he did. Yeah. A very like Spencer Horwitz is Jewish kind of.
Cullen Large is a good one.
Cullen Large. And, yeah.
Manuel Bonilla is one of those ones that just sounds like a baseball name.
Rainer Nunez as well.
Noswell Polino, how about that?
That's a good one. Tucker Thoman.
Tucker Thoman is yeah, that's in the school of like if it sounds like a NASCAR name, then you have a good shot of being a good baseball one. And he's their recent first round draft pick. So I do like the new Beltre that they went and snagged.
Yeah.
I think that's
yeah. Always good to have that name recognition.
What about Devereaux Harrison?
That Devereaux Harrison sounds like a spy. I like it. Or like a film noir character.
Joel Concepcion, and Joel is JOL.
Any Concepcion is always a good name.
Yes. You gotta sometimes go to the bullpen for these. You gotta go to like the single A bullpen guy, which is like now we're talking. Now we're absolutely talking. Yeah, I think there's some good ones in there. Fitz Stadler, that sounds like a NASCAR.
I know we traded him, but I really like the name Gunnar Hoglund.
Yes. There is okay, so I'm gonna make my last pick here. This will be my last pick, my official pick for this.
Okay.
Rookie ball starting pitcher, signed in January of 2022. MNN Flores.
What?
MNN Flores. E-M-I-N-E-N.
Ooh.
MNN.
MNN, that's fantastic.
They used to have, was it Jack Cicero LeBron used to be? Jack Cicero LeBron got moved on with. And you can even put it down. January 17th, I tweeted it out. MNN Flores.
That's really good. I like that.
Although on his when he signed it said M&M's, but I'm looking at it now. MNN E-M-I-N-E-N Flores.
That's great stuff.
MNN. Okay, here's one that we're uniquely suited for. Dave Church, why am I weirdly pessimistic about this Blue Jays team? Can you validate me or talk me out of it? I think you went through a period where you were pessimistic about this team, yes?
Oh yeah. Oh man, right after I would say right up to the Varsho trade.
Yeah.
And even slightly after. I was really not feeling I think until I started seeing them actually play the games in spring. It was really hard for me to sort of be talked into the vibe of what they were going for. I feel a lot better about it now, obviously, because now I'm quite optimistic about the team. But I get it. I don't see any. I don't fault anyone who looks at this team is like, I don't know.
Totally. I get it. And I can see, and we'll get into this again. I can see not being as sold on like Dalton Varsho as everybody else seems to be. I can totally see being like everyone's like, man, you got to see the roots. You got to see what a great defensive player he is. And then you're like, okay, but why is he playing left field, right?
It's I like, also, yeah,
What are we doing here?
I also think when you look at the off season in general, and like throughout all of Major League Baseball, and so many teams moved and added so many big impact names, or signed so many big impact names, and the Jays didn't really do that. Because they have those guys already, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But I also understand how you can sort of watch these. You watch a team like the Padres, or what the Mets tried to do, with like, we're just going to sign the good players, and fuck you. And then, you know, the Jays made potentially solid, smart, unexciting moves. Yeah. I can see how that's sort of like. I get how that feels sort of like a half measure.
Yeah, I can also see, like, on first blush, before we've seen anything, there's nothing that you're like, oh, man, they definitively won this trade, right?
Yes, 100%.
I think they sort of went into it thinking, like, maybe we lose three trades overall. Like, one-to-one, we don't come out on the high end of any of the trades. But as a whole, as a big picture, our team is better having made them, right? I think we'll talk about it again, so take a drink. Teoscar for Swanson is sort of the example of this, right? There's no way that they can win that trade, really. There's just no way.
Yeah.
But you sort of you look at the big picture of like that money allowed them to do like Bassett and allowed them to open up some things, and the position freedom allowed them to go and get Varsho, and that allows them to get Kiermaier, and that allows them to become a lot better at this. And you could say, you could argue, you know, if you're not high on Varsho, you're giving up your number one prospect as well as a very solid major league hitter in Lourdes Gurriel. And I can see, you know, it would be one thing if they didn't take anything off of the major league roster last year, but they traded everyday starters from last year's team, right? They took a 92-win team and traded two of the starting outfielders off of it. And I can see why that would make you pessimistic, especially with the growth that we experience with those guys. It's not nothing that we got to watch Teoscar and Lourdes grow up here and become everyday star players. So I can get it. I am unfortunately bound by drinking the Kool-Aid and believing that they are going to win 93 games in the World Series. Piri Piri Pai, who we always appreciate, and question similar to James Gleason's, but more specific, what renovation specifically are you looking forward to seeing when attending a game?
I think it's gotta be the Rays bullpens.
Oh, it's the bullpens. I saw a photo of it the other day. Oh my god.
Yeah, it's definitely the bullpens.
Drooling. There's nothing better than Rays bullpens. Nothing.
I understand why it's not, but I had a moment when I saw the picture the other day of forgetting that the sort of the fence below them is not seating, and it's like the
correct. It's where the dudes will be hanging out.
It's where the dudes hang out. And part of me was like, man, I wish that was seating.
Yes, there are stadiums where it is seating, and it's insanely cool to walk around down there. But it'll be neat to see the dudes through the fence.
The dudes through the fence, and then just like, if you're sitting like first row 100 outfield, just having the bullpen in front of you is so cool.
Yeah, absolutely right.
To watch, like, if you're a process guy,
like it rocks.
To watch the process of warming up for a Major League Baseball game as a pitcher, that's going to be cool as hell.
I've been to a few parks where the bullpens are raised, and just standing there and standing like beside the pitcher warming up is like so cool. It's so dope. You're above it when you're in the before you would stand above the guy and you get an idea of it. When you're standing beside the dude, it's like this is crazy. These guys are superhuman. They're absolute freaks.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of, you know, we talked a lot about not a lot about it, but you know, it was a big theme this week watching the World Baseball Classic and the beauty of the game with watching Shohei and Trout and everything. And if you're into that kind of thing, standing beside a major league pitcher throwing a baseball, it's just going to be so cool. I can't wait.
Paul Adam, in your heart of hearts, the only heart you have, which Blue Jay do you believe is going to surprise and disappoint you the most this season?
Ooh.
this could be the same guy for both picks for me. They could both be Kevin Biggio for me, to be honest.
I was going to say could both be Kevin Kiermaier.
No, I think my surprise guy this year is Whit Merrifield. I'm buying the I'm buying the like he is sort of the secret sauce at the bottom part of the lineup. Annoy like a guy that teams will just be like they'll have that first half of the lineup that they'll slog through and they'll just be so annoyed that Whit Merrifield is on base again because like there's just no break. I think you look at it and like the contact and the speed and I think Whit Merrifield is my guy that I expect could surprise some people this year.
Yeah, I also have Whit as my surprise guy, mostly because I hate him so much and like have come to begrudgingly like him as a Blue Jay. He really like screaming when he got hits in that horrible second wild card game. I was kind of like, oh, this sucks. But you got to embrace it now. So, yeah, I think Witt's going to be my surprise guy. Disappointment? Like, I can't pick anyone other than Kevin Kiermaier. Like, ever since they signed him, I've just had this feeling of, like, every four games he's coming up in a big spot, and you're just like, ugh. Like, his defense is going to be fine. If he can stay on the field for most of the season, that's a win. But, like, I feel like I'm going to be so annoyed watching him hit. Or it's going to be one of the big bullpen guys.
I think my letdown guy might be Brandon Belt. Because, like, I believe so firmly in him, if it's working, being, like, such a perfect middle-of-the-order guy. Mm-hmm. But if he is cooked, and the knee injury and the age and the exit velo, if he's just cooked and that doesn't hit for any power and is just sort of, like, a real waste of a roster spot, that's going to wear on me of, like, man, they didn't have to do – they could have gone a lot of different ways, right? Cause we sat here in free agency time and in trade time, and there were a lot of different ways they could have taken that extra dude, right? And they took basically a DH, right? They taken a DH. They said, we know guys are going to cycle through here. He might play some first, but we're not going to sign a fourth outfielder of any repute. We're not going to get a guy that can do much else besides hit. And if Belt isn't hitting, it's going to be trouble. So
yeah,
Belt is my concern.
I think with Belt, it's not even disappointment. It's just he's such a 50-50 guy to me.
Yeah.
Like I think there's ample chance, equal chance that he OPS is like 930.
Yeah.
Or like 4. You know what I mean?
He was so good in 2021. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Just wanted to remind you again, promo code less than J's, all caps, all one word at the Left Field Brewery fan shop, fanshop.leftfieldbrewery.ca, and orders of $55 or more delivered right to your door across Ontario. You get a free koozie. We really like working with Left Field Brewery, and if we are able to ship them a bunch of koozies, that would look good on us because we like to be rewarded for having a cool fan base, and we like them. So, ice cold beer available all over the place. Ice cold lime dropped today on the 23rd. You can pick it up in mixed six packs, LCBOs, or mixed 24s at the brewery. Just so you know. Okay, so very simple episode this week. Best and worst case scenarios. We went over that. We are a week away, as I said, from the season opener. I think we're still 20-ish days from the home opener. I don't know that everything's... They're on the road to start the year. I know that much, right?
Yes, I believe so.
They're on the road for like the first 2 weeks, I think, just to make sure that everything is okay.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, sometime in April. I know that I'm going to a game on like mid-April, so it has to be before then.
We're going to do the annoying guy thing. When do they go to Montreal this year? think they do. I don't know why that would make me laugh. yes, so 3 in St. Louis, 4 in Kansas City, 3 in Los Angeles, and then April 11th, the Blue Jays are back home to take on the Detroit Tigers. So we are still a handful of days, 18 days away from the home opener. Lots of time between here and there. It's time. I thought we'd close the show out with a good old-fashioned reverse mailbag, if that makes sense to you. Yes, Jake?
I think that sounds great.
Very simple reverse mailbag this week, Jake. I'll dig the first one in.
Do it.
Very simple reverse mailbag. Could not be. Well, we may not put an easier one out all year long than this, okay? Reverse mailbag is very simple. With the theme of the show, give us your best case and worst case scenario Blue Jays wins for the season.
That's great.
And if you'd like to, easy. If you'd like to add a little color to each one of your answers and let us know how you arrived at that answer, would love to know it. I think we landed on, I think I landed on 95 wins, best case, winning the East. And I think I said 83, 84, and finishing behind the O's was my worst case. Let us know your best case and worst case at LessThanJays on Twitter, LessThanJays@gmail.com. If you want more content, I'm finishing out the 40 and 30 Patreon series, patreon.com/LessThanJays. You get a little extra episode, more mailbag, all kinds of extra stuff. And I'll tell you, there's a big perk, big-ass perk to being a Patreon subscriber right now that you could maybe get in time if you subscribe today. But that is it for another episode. Jake, anything to add here at the end?
No.
We didn't talk about the World Baseball Classic. I forgot. Unbelievable.
It was great.
Unbelievable.
What else can you say? It was perfect.
Who would have thought that of the Big Four, the traditional Big Four, baseball would have the best-on-best tournament of the last little bit?
I know the hockey guys are really tweeting about how to make it happen with them. So
they haven't had one in forever. And
because it's, you can't. It's not interesting.
Crazy. Incredible. Ohtani, Trout. How is Shohei Ohtani even real? I couldn't believe it.
He's it's like we know it's one like we know that he's not real
because
of everything he does. But to see him on a stage that matters, which we haven't in North America, he's unbelievable. He's a freak. Like I cannot explain how happy watching the end of that game made me.
It's hard to articulate because you want to be like as accurate as you can. But I was sort of struck with like one of the things that blows my mind about Ohtani is not just how great he is and how. It's that, like, no one's even been close to this, right? It's not just that no one's even been so good at both things that they were like, yeah, you should be decent at both of these, right? There's been, nobody's even suggested it that somebody else should try to do both at the same time. We've had guys that converted from one to the other, and we had pitchers who could sort of hit. We never had a pitcher so good at hitting that they were like, you should play in the outfield, or you should DH on your day off. who's also happens to be the fastest home to first, like insanity, the strongest, the fastest, the best hitter, the best pitcher. I am in complete awe of him. So excited for when he joins the Jays.
Yeah. That's the big trade deadline acquisition this year.
Don't get me started. Tiedemann and,
who cares? Don't care. Trade anybody for him.
Yeah.
Literally trade anybody on the team for Shohei Ohtani. I don't care.
Awesome. All right. Well, that is it for another episode. We'll be back next week to talk about the home opener. Oh my, not the home opener. I did it again. The season opener. Blue Jays Cardinals. Will you be around for that? I know you traveling that.
Yeah, I'll be around for that game.
Great.
I leave on Friday.
Perfect. So we'll talk that night. We will be back next week. Thank you so much, as always, for being a part of Less Than Jays.